these are some of the worst conditions I've seen people living in across my 17-year career as a practitioner. So in terms of Sudan and the need, we're looking at about 2.56 million people, which is over half of the population. They're facing acute hunger, and this includes more than 755,000 people on the brink of famine, and that was reported several weeks ago. So we expect those numbers to be even higher right now. So of that, an estimated 10.7 million people are now internally displaced. So this makes Sudan the largest internal displacement crisis in the world, and it's also become the world's largest hunger crisis as a result. To put a finer point on this, a recent assessment by Mercy Corps' team in Central and South Darfur, they recently found 9 out of 10 children are suffering from life-threatening malnutrition, and this is particularly affecting children under 5. So you can see here by the numbers that the needs are incredibly high, and the situation is very dire. Now, you mentioned access. Access through cross-border points and through cross-line points in the country is incredibly challenging. In addition to the conflict and the insecurity that makes movement for humanitarian workers very dangerous, if not impossible, there are bureaucratic and administrative impediments that have been imposed on humanitarian actors as it relates to getting into the country and moving around. So visas have been challenging for humanitarian actors to get in a timely manner. Approvals to move from state to state to take vehicles and people where the most needs are. And so we really do need to see a lot of these processes streamlined. Now, you referenced ADRE. The announcement that ADRE border crossing is open is potentially a good thing. It could be a lifeline for Darfur, but it's really only if it's done right. And this is kind of the big question mark right now that we're all in the process of trying to sort out is, will we be able to use the crossing under the conditions that the various authorities are trying to get humanitarian actors to follow? And so this is really the question now, and it's in terms of negotiations, in terms of how can we use this crossing in a way that is unfettered and allows us to reach people with what they need when they need it and not be delayed and delayed even further.
Talking about access points opened, but you also alluded to the challenges of movement from point A to point Z. You alluded to bureaucracy in getting necessary clearance or documentation for aid workers to get into Sudan. How is Mercy Corps mitigating this multitask? You want to deliver aid, and yet you have challenges facing you.
Humanitarians and humanitarian organizations, we are very transparent and we operate legally in countries where there's humanitarian need. That means, like in the United States and in the UK and elsewhere, we need to register as a nonprofit organization. You know, we need to, have all of our workers and employees in line with labor rights and all of that. And so in countries where there's a humanitarian response, we register with the various authorities so they know who we are. We operate as civilians. You know, we're citizens. We don't have special privileges and immunities such as the UN and UN staff. So we go in on our normal passports. On visas that the host country will provide and what have you. So in the context of Sudan, the bureaucratic and administrative processes to get in and move around, and this is both in SAF and RSF-controlled areas, are becoming quite challenging to address. And this is due to general disorganization, but it's also due to how many requirements there are, how there is no real consistency in the application of those requirements, and there's not really transparency or feedback provided in terms of if we get approval to do something or not. You're really kind of faced with very unpredictable timeframes, and this significantly hampers the response. It also increases the cost because you're trying to manage addressing all of these various impediments while trying to get people into the country to surge up relief efforts. And so what you are faced with is having to keep staff in other locations while their visas and other entry permits are being processed. And this just adds up. And this is donor dollars, essentially going to waste because of these bureaucratic processes.
It appears like other conflicts around the world have diverted the attention of the international community. I'm talking about Gaza, Ukraine. The Sudanese say activists and civil societies that I've spoken to say they are forgotten. Talk to me about the funding needs for this huge operation.
Yes. When I was in Sudan, I also very much heard the same message from community members, from displaced people, from our own staff, very much feeling that Sudan has, completely just been forgotten and is just off the radar of decision makers and people that can take action. So as a result, very unfortunately, the humanitarian appeal, so that's the top line number of dollars essentially that's needed to address the assessed needs. We're currently seeking $2.7 billion. And right now that's just 41% funded. And of that 41% funded, there's funding in there that hasn't yet been released to partners. And so we're looking at significant funding deficiencies for humanitarian needs that are growing by the day. I mean, we're looking at famine pockets, and the real risk here is that the famine is going to become widespread across the whole of the country. When I was in the East, I did see hunger and malnutrition and people, starving, and that was just the tip of the iceberg. And so this $2.7 billion appeal, just being 41% funded, it's just not sufficient. We need more money from donors, and that money needs to go directly to NGOs. NGOs are on the front line of service provision across the country.